Are you stressed? In our fast-paced world, many of us are, but there's something better than alcohol or big pharma pills that could add years to your life. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust.
How much is that doggy in the window? Arf, arf. If you're stressed, it's a question you might want to ask. Researchers say companion animals like dogs lower the stress hormone cortisol, and lower stress can lead to a longer, happier life. Pet owners also have significantly lower blood pressure, cholesterol, and triglyceride levels. This can be especially important for patients recovering from heart attacks. In fact, studies show that pet owners have a much higher one-year heart attack survival rate than those without pets. And dogs are not the only animals with health benefits. Cats, birds, and even fish can also work miracles. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht for StartMail.com.
This is the Dr. Catherine Albrecht Show.
Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Wave your hand to encourage them. Wave your hand to encourage them. As they march into the palaces of the high and mighty, I, the Lord, have dedicated these soldiers for this task. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. And they will rejoice when I am exalted.
Happy Good News Friday. Hello, Dr. Catherine Albrecht here, taking us into a weekend with some good news. It's Good News Friday. Well, my first good news is that I am broadcasting my third consecutive day in the brand new radio studio here, video studio, I don't know. It's a media studio at Crossroads Community Church. I'm super excited. I have a camera on me, and it is filming. It's not going to be available to anyone but me afterwards. I'm going to take a look and see, can I actually do this or not? But it does have our great new background. You can see me here with headphones on and a microphone in front of me, just like a radio host typically looks. And there's me doing it. If this works out, I'm going to... hopefully the camera software will work all the way through to the end of the hour. Then I'm going to take a look at it, see what kind of tweaks I have to make to the lighting, the background, the sound quality, and all of that. It may be that Monday is another day of testing, or it may actually be that Monday we launch this live on our YouTube streaming channel, which is going to be, we just set it up last night. I think it went into, came into existence today. And I will provide you with the link and all the information of how to find it. But hopefully Monday and or maybe by Tuesday, I will be live streaming on video. It's a little bit, what's the word I want? I'm a little nervous. There we go. Yeah, new. It's all new. Now, the other thing I tried to do in recent days is learn how to be... a little freer with my presence online. I took my phone and I was just sitting on my sofa in the living room and tested out a couple of things of the, you know how it goes. Hi guys. Hey guys. Hey guys, I just wanted to say this and this and this. All right, see ya. I did a couple of those in anticipation, hopefully, of being able to do more ongoing kind of live, unscripted, spontaneous moments in which I have these insights that normally I write down or I save them for you guys on the show. And maybe if I can get comfortable enough and familiar enough with doing it, I will have an app on my phone. I can just, wherever I am, whatever I see, whatever I'm thinking, just do a quick 30-second update and hit a button and boom, it'll be on YouTube. We'll see. All right, so say a prayer. Thank you for your prayers for the studio. They worked. The studio is doing great. Wonderful. I have no problems. Praise God. And we'll move into the next step. So the next step is going to be broadcasting this program through a video stream, and then it's going to be opening up our use of the studio to other things. And I've got a ton, underscored, of content that is not really radio content, but would make absolutely perfect and appropriate content for longer videos or shorter videos. Everything from lessons and instruction to more detailed analyses of certain things. I've got the ability to split the screen and bring up web pages and bring up diagrams and drawings and such. So look forward. I hope you're looking forward. I'm looking forward to a whole new level of content and a new way of interacting. So should be fun. I've been doing this since, when did I start? 2008? Been doing this for a while. No, I think it was even before that. Anyway, I've been doing radio since 2001 as a guest on other people's shows, and doing my own show since at least 2008-ish. So now we're moving out of the audio world of radio and into the world of podcasting, video streaming. We'll see. Okay, so here's my good news, and this, I think it is good news, but it's news that we're going to have to think about and process through together. There is a new study that finds that happiness does not result, this is not going to be a big surprise to you, does not result from material possessions or from professional accomplishment or accolades or the admiration of others. It boils down to one simple thing. All right. In a nutshell, 1,600 people were studied in New Zealand to figure out what it is that contributes to their happiness and well-being. All right, let me read the opening of this article here. Forget Marie Kondo's organized closets. You know, that's where, do things bring you joy? New research reveals people who embrace a simple lifestyle may feel better, not only because they own fewer possessions, but more strongly because they build greater communities and share more with their neighbors. Now, we all know that no one on their deathbed says, oh, I wish I'd worked harder. Oh, I wish I'd made more money. Oh, I wish, and material things. What do they always say? On my deathbed, I wish I were not estranged from my kids. I wish I had lived a better life and helped people more. I wish I had just, even Scrooge, right, from the Christmas Carol. I wish I'd been a better person. I wish I'd been kinder and had more people in my life. So at the end of life, at pretty much universally, people's views in those final moments come down to human connections, emotion, love, relationships, family, all of those things. Well, that's what the, unsurprisingly, that's what they've found in this research from the University of, let me see if I can read it, Otago in New Zealand. All right, here's what they found. The beneficence, that's a word I think they coined, beneficence dimension of voluntary simplicity, which includes activities like sharing the fruits of your labor with others outside your immediate family, putting effort into building community, sharing skills and labor. Those were the things that showed the strongest direct relationship with well-being. Owning less was part of a voluntary simplicity lifestyle, but it contributes only indirectly in so far as it contributes to this overall pattern of community in your living behaviors. All right, the findings suggest that both consumer culture's promise that buying more will lead to satisfaction and the minimalism movement's focus on decluttering alone are overlooking a deeper issue, and that is the role of social connection in supporting happiness. So I guess you can have a lot, you could have a little. And as long as you have people, you will be happier with the people, whether you have a lot or a little. All right. Community connections matter more than owning less stuff. All right. Now, we know that, we've been told, right? He who dies with the most toys wins. We know that's not true. We have been told that if you could just get that new car, if you could just lose those 30 pounds, if you could just change your material circumstances in particular ways, then you would be happy. But that's not the case. As you know, think of the most successful people we know. They're also among the most unhappy. There are countless stories, and you don't have to look far to find them, of people who have become rock stars and actors and actresses and politicians, people who can fill a stadium with 20, 30, 40,000 people. And if that level of fame and the money and all the things that come with it brought happiness, then they would be the happiest people in the world. And yet, they are the people who are drug addicted. They are the people who turn to alcohol and other vices in order to even get through their day. And they report a deep sense of unhappiness. You don't really hear very often from people living that lifestyle who say, I have so much peace. I have so much joy. It's the most wonderful thing in the world to be as famous as I am and have as many people looking to me and admiring me. It's really given me just a tremendous sense of joy and happiness. That's not what they say. What do they say? I feel hounded. I feel tremendous pressure. I feel, fill in whatever negative blank you want. And those are the people who will wind up with broken marriages. They'll wind up with unsatisfying personal lives. They'll wind up with a lot of physical ailments. And they wind up with deep mental health issues. And I would say that they're spiritual, you know, they're issues of the heart. It doesn't pay to be at the top. It doesn't pay to be more important or more powerful than your spouse, than your kids, than the legions of 50,000 screaming fans. If you put yourself at the top, you're going to be mighty lonely and really unhappy. All right, we'll talk about what brings happiness right after this. Stay tuned.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust. Your email is your business. But if it's spied on, hacked, or intercepted, it can fall into the wrong hands. The solution is encryption, a high-tech way to scramble your data so no one can read it. For years, only the technical elite could use this powerful tool, until StartMail came along. StartMail not only lets you encrypt the email you send, it encrypts your entire account. Encryption. It's just one more way StartMail.com keeps you safe.
Night watchman, how long till daybreak? Night watchman, how long till daybreak? How long will this night last? How long will this night last? Morning's coming, morning's coming, but for now, it's still night.
Hey, I'm back. Catherine Albert here, broadcasting from my studio, and I have this little window where I can actually see myself. I'll tell you one thing right off the bat is that, hang on, how do I get over there? Is that when I move my head to the left, it goes to the right. Zoom doesn't do that, by the way. Zoom gives you a kind of intuitive feel that if your head looks like it's leaning to the left and you lean it to the right, it actually corrects. But this particular setup, my head looks like it's leaning left, so I lean right, and I don't know, I can't even tell. So my biggest issue right now is that the camera stopped recording completely. So that's my first tip here. And my second issue is that my head is super crooked. So anyway, I'll be learning. You can learn along with me. You can give me feedback as this actually begins streaming. All right. So talking about what makes people happy, and I think in our spirit, it's intuitive. It makes perfect sense that simplicity and good relationships would make people happy. And that runs counter to what we are told and what I think our knee-jerk reaction would be to say, that obviously having material belongings and success and fame and all those things must make you happy, but it doesn't. The one thing we know about money, though, is that not having enough of it will make you unhappy. So stress over money is a terrible thing. Having enough money is the sweet spot, the sweet spot. Having too much or too little is kind of like Goldilocks with the chairs or with the porridge. It's either too hot or too cold, and the sweet spot is right in the middle. The same thing is true for money. What you need versus what you want is one of the deciding factors of whether you will have satisfaction. If you have a whole lot of things that you want and you can't get them, then obviously you're going to always feel like you're falling short. But if instead you have a grateful heart and say, Lord, thank you for providing me with what I need. You meet all my needs. That is my sense of God. And when I've had my needs increase, when there has been a new need for more money, he's provided. He's just provided. But I've never had more than I've needed, and I've never had not enough. So there is a sweet spot in there. And I think a lot of this really does come down to allowing the Holy Spirit to operate in your heart the way it's meant to, because it will lead to greater relationships between you and people. It will improve your sense of well-being in your heart. All right. Let me get back to that if I can find it. All right. Just a couple more things from this study, and then I want to move on and talk about another thing that brings peace right after this. All right. When researchers looked at what was specifically related to well-being, material simplicity was not a direct predictor. Let me go on. Standout factor, beneficence. We talked about, beneficence. There we go. Beneficence. People who embrace simple living, there we go, reported higher satisfaction in life achievement and community connection, and smaller improvements in personal relationships, health, and living standards. Now, this is interesting because you would think that the people with the highest success or the highest ratings for their life achievement would be the people who have achieved the most in their lives. And yet, that's not what we find. If you survey people who we believe have attained tremendous success in our society, people who are in government or people who have climbed the corporate ladder or people who are famous or people who are making a lot of money, successful in their careers, and you look at life achievement, what's interesting is that it's not a direct correlation between what externally we see people have achieved and what they feel they've achieved. Sometimes the emptiest of people are the people who have achieved the most in that regard. And again, I'm going to refer to Ebenezer Scrooge. He had tons of money, but terrible relationships. And I'm sure his life achievement scale, that's what the Christmas Carol is all about. Charles Dickens' tale of him having to deal with the different ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future, and soften his heart and become a better human being. The life achievement there of having all the money in the world, which he had thought as a young man would make him happy, really didn't. All right. The study found no significant link. I thought that was interesting. No significant link with safety or future security. Overall, it was the social aspect rather than simply reducing possessions that most clearly boosted well-being. That issue of safety, I'm gonna put it right alongside of money. That if you don't have enough, if you are chronically unsafe, if you are in an environment that's dangerous, or you're in a relationship that's abusive, that's probably going to pretty dramatically impair your well-being. But adding more safety once you've hit that baseline doesn't really add up to greater happiness, right? So, and the same thing is also true for financial security, health security, and all of those things. All you need is the baseline. Be in the sweet spot. Be in the sweet spot. All right, how did they study this? Well, they surveyed a representative sample of New Zealanders, men and women, about the same, half and half. Median age of 45, median household income was right around the average median in that society. They answered questions about their engagement across six areas: material simplicity, resource conservation, local purchasing, self-sufficient food production, community involvement, and work-life balance. They looked at two different measures of well-being, which we can explore a little bit here. Hedonic, H-E-D-O-N-I-C. That's where we get the word hedonism, right? Like just live for yourself, live for pleasure and enjoyment. Hedonic well-being included life satisfaction, happiness, and their own opinion of their well-being. And something called eudaimonic well-being, and that is personal growth and psychological flourishing. They split their sample in half and looked at patterns, and here's what they found. Women benefit more than men from simple living. That, in a way, that makes sense. Women are wired for relationships, and for women, when their relationships aren't working, I think we experience a more immediate sense of misery than men do. Men seem to be able to kind of muddle along in unsatisfying relationships without it having a huge impact on their well-being. Women, on the other hand, can't tolerate it. So the relationship component to this was much more important to women than it was to men. Gender, gender also impacted how they related to simplicity. Women who practiced voluntary simplicity had stronger positive effects than men for both of those measures, the hedonic sort of pleasure and the eudaimonic, the psychological well-being. All right, women are also more likely to embrace simple living than men. This was the first research that these researchers were aware of that looked at gender to see if there's a difference there. Age made no difference. So you people who are younger, you people who are older, simplistic living and relationships will help you every bit as much. All right, so basically the takeaway here, do not focus on decluttering your possessions, because that's kind of a focus once again in the material world. Instead, focus on community, on relationships, and on, here they have, join community gardens, participate in tool libraries. I wish we had one of those. I'd be the first person there checking out tools. Organizing neighborhood skill sharing groups. Now, remember, this is New Zealand. Americans are like, yeah, how am I going to do that? Organize neighborhood skill sharing groups and buy from local producers. Basically, any activity that creates social connections that are strongly linked to higher well-being. All right, so if you take a look across the globe, and we've done some shows in the past on the happiness index. And what they have consistently found across countries is that the happiest countries are up in Scandinavia. And you would think they'd be miserable. They've got, 6 months out of the year, they barely see the sun. It is very cold. It is somewhat dark. They're not outside, able to do lots and lots of exercise. And yet they're very happy. Why is that? Well, the reason I think ties directly into this study from New Zealand, and that is that they've been forced to create social structures to get them through those rough patches. So in countries like Sweden and Finland and Norway, you will find many organized, sort of an expectation that people will participate in many organized adult activities. And I recently saw an article, I didn't click it up, but I saw the headline. It said that in America, There are groups now putting together summer camps, you know, like the summer camp you would go to off in the woods in the Catskills, and you would, make woven bracelets and do the zip line and all of that. Well, they've begun putting those together for adults, and they're finding that they're incredibly popular and they're very successful. Even in corporate settings, when they put together those team building exercises and they go out into a rope climbing course or out into the woods, or they go hiking, they've found the same results, that adults, not just kids, but adults need to be with other adults, need to be having social activity. And we are so isolated. I think it's worse now with remote working and all of the great tools that we added to our society during COVID that allow people to stay home and work remotely. I'm a great example. I'm here in a soundproof room in a church that has, I don't think anybody's still here. It's just me in this room talking to all of you guys. And it's a sense of community in a way. You're hearing my voice, and I know you're out there listening. But when it comes to actually doing things together, well, we're not really connecting, are we? And that is a uniquely modern phenomenon. Never before in human history has it been possible to get all of your needs met remotely, right? You can, COVID made this possible. You can get an app on your phone. You can order your groceries. You can go through each aisle virtually. You can pick out what you want. You can click a button. You can make a payment on a credit card, and someone you never even see will drive to your house, deposit those groceries on your front porch. You can look at them through the little peephole, wait till they're gone, and go out and get your groceries. Right? That's never been possible before. So what's interesting here is the more we interact with others, the happier we are. And yet, here we are, working as hard as we can to have less interaction. All right, more on this in a moment. Stay tuned.
Is your email box overrun with spam? With a StartMail account, you'll never have to give your real email address to a stranger again. Online shopping, newsletter subscriptions, getting that 30% off coupon, they all need your email address. But with StartMail, you can invent new addresses or aliases linked to your inbox behind the scenes and give those out to people while keeping your real address hidden. It's just one more protection from StartMail.com.
Red alert, Yahoo users. You've fallen in a trap that could ruin your life if you keep using Yahoo.
You consent to sharing all data in your email account with our AI providers, and you grant us a perpetual license to use, display, publish, and publicly distribute your content in any media known now or in the future, and to let other users access and distribute it as well.
Yikes! It's time to switch to StartMail, the only email that's AI-free and private by design. StartMail.com. Use promo code JD.
Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time. Casting all your care upon Him, casting all your worries upon Him, for He cares for you, He cares for you, He cares, He cares for you.
Hey, I'm back. All right, so it's a little bit ironic here. I clicked up during the break that Finland is the happiest country in the world. And back when I did a couple of shows on this, I talked about not only in Finland, but I believe it's in Sweden and Norway as well, that they have this expectation that adults will belong to social groups. And they get together a couple of times a week, and they do things together. Sometimes what they do is just get together in the sauna. Sometimes what they do is engage in particular clubs and activities. I guess we would call it like a sewing circle here. However, just now I clicked it up trying to look for Finnish social life. And what I'm finding is that here it says they feel the safest at home. They're not the most sociable people. If you've ever met a Finn, it's true. They're not super expressive. They're not super friendly. I guess we wouldn't consider them warm, but they do have structures built in. So it's not even so much your emotional warmth that makes for this happiness. It's the engaging with other people that does it. I think Americans in Finland would probably feel a little bit out of place with that. Let me talk for a minute about what sort of the contrast here in the U.S. We have a loneliness epidemic in this country. This study is out, this is through Harvard, the Graduate School of Education, my own alma mater, from October 2024. Loneliness, even before the COVID pandemic, was a major public health concern in the U.S., and yet it may just be the tip of the iceberg, according to this study. They suggest that 21% of adults in the U.S. feel lonely, and many people feel disconnected from their friends, their family, and the world. Right? Now, that's 2024, so this is post, this is after the pandemic, post-lockdown. This is how people are feeling. Would you say it's 21%? I think the number's probably higher. The data also suggests that underneath the loneliness may be a troubling brew of feelings that include anxiety, depression, and lack of meaning and purpose. Right. So if we look at the contrast between the happiness found in New Zealand from this simplicity and simple living and community, and we look at what's going on in Finland, where they actually build in structures to spend more time together, and then we look at what's happening in the U.S., where people are very lonely. And like I said, a lot of us working remotely, a lot of us able to get our needs met indoors without really doing much. And we get our social needs met, and we think we're getting them met by seeing lots of people, hearing lots of people talk through social media, but we're not really interacting with them. All right, here's what Harvard found, that loneliness may not only be the cause, but the result of troubling feelings. So you might be feeling lonely because you've isolated yourself due to depression and anxiety. People who reported loneliness were far more likely to report anxiety, depression, a lack of meaning and purpose, and the sense that their place in the world is not important. 81% of all lonely adults reported feeling anxiety or depression. 75% of them said that they felt their lives had no purpose. Now, it's really hard to tell which way does it go. Does it start with the depression and the anxiety causing you to isolate and become lonely? Or does loneliness and solitude and not having interaction go the other way around and make you feel depressed? Probably a bit of both. It's probably a vicious circle. All right, the second key finding, high percentages of lonely respondents reported social emotional loneliness, for example, not being part of a meaningful group. 2/3 of them felt that. Not having enough close friends or family. That was also 2/3. Similarly, high numbers of respondents reported existential loneliness. Fundamentally disconnected from others and from the world, or feeling that their place in the world was not important or relevant. All right, let's look at that one. There's a really simple, straightforward answer to that one, and it's church. Study after study has found that church attendance is correlated with well-being and negatively correlated with this sense of loneliness, purposelessness, or this sort of existential angst. Why is that? Well, because in church, you're around a group of people who is just by definition pretty accepting. And if that's not your sense of church, find a new church. Because if your church is not welcoming, if it's judgmental, if you feel that you go in there and people are looking down on you and it makes you feel lonelier than before you went, that's not you. That's your church. Find another church. My church is warm and welcoming, and many other churches I've attended, I have the same feeling. If you go and they don't immediately greet you, it may be they're a little on the shy side themselves, But plugging into a community with a church, finding a Bible study group you can belong to. Here at our church, we have volunteer food distributions every couple of Saturdays where we bring in big food trucks and have members of the community drive into our parking lot. And we get together a couple hours beforehand with grocery bags, and we fill up bags with all of the different produce and meat and dairy products, and then we hand them out to people. So it's a community activity, makes you feel purposeful, meaningful. You're doing something useful, and you're interacting with other people. And then, of course, this sense that you are existentially lonely, well, once you have the Holy Spirit, it's hard to feel completely alone in a good way. In a good way. Number three, striking numbers of respondents do not feel that they're part of this country. This is in the U.S. 19% of all respondents and 40% of lonely respondents said they don't feel like they even have community within the United States. Democrats and independents were more likely than Republicans to feel this disconnect. Again, this is 2024 when we have a Republican administration. So I'm not sure if Democrats would feel the opposite under a if Republicans would feel isolated and not part of the country under a Democratic administration, not really sure about that. When we ask respondents who or what they think contributes to loneliness in society, what do you think was at the top of the list? 73% of people said technology. Technology. So this trend of loneliness, you know, it's just like I've been talking about. Technology gives you great gifts with one hand and stabs you in the back with the other. On the one hand, it's really great. You don't have to go out and fight traffic and commute to a faraway office and spend time in an office when you really just want to be home, right? That's kind of a pain. But so how wonderful that we have Zoom, that we have remote work technologies, that we have the internet, so you can just do all your work online. And the backstab is that that causes you to be really lonely. So once again, technology has proven to be what I argue it is, a double-edged sword with great gifts. And right after you get the great gifts, you start feeling the pain. Encouragingly, now this is from the study. I got one of these things in a box with a quote. The solution people endorsed most is available to all of us. And it is this: take time out each day to reach out to a friend or a family member. That does not mean writing them an email, although that could help, but the face-to-face interactions are the ones that count. So call them up. Get together on Zoom, but with a friend. So you're not just on Zoom doing a work meeting, but you're actually talking to a relative, right? An old friend from high school or college. Reaching out to people in person, of course, is even better. If you can find an elderly person in your community, perhaps, who needs groceries delivered or needs a ride to the doctor, it can even be that simple, just interacting with people and feeling useful. All right, key recommendations. We need to start promoting a culture of caring. Well, duh. Working together on common problems can solve, can serve important goals. 75% of adult respondents said that if they could find ways to help others, such as doing community service, that would reduce their loneliness. And this reminds me of something from Ben Franklin's autobiography. He had a really good line in there that's always stuck with me. Ben Franklin said, if you want to develop a closer relationship with another person, offer or ask them to do you a small favor. And he gave the example of, I think, borrowing a book. But I have found this works across the board. Ask them to do a small favor. Not a favor like, hey, could you hand me that, thing over there? But a small favor like, I am wondering if you could help me with this or that. And it could be something small, like, could you help me jump start my car? Not that you're going to want to set that one up. But you know what I'm saying? Like that level of favor. And what Ben Franklin observed in his autobiography is that asking people favors creates a sense of connection between you and them. And it's interesting. You don't offer to do them a favor. You ask them to do you a favor. And once they've done that in their minds, they will view you as a person who they help, who they're connected with, who they could ask for help. So this one, 75% of people say that finding ways to help others, or such as community service or caring for others, would help with their loneliness. Try it. Pick somebody you would like to be closer with, somebody you'd like to get to know, and ask them for a small favor. And I don't know, report back. Let me know if it works. All right. Second key recommendation, building a social infrastructure that allows people to find and can sustain meaningful connections. Well, pretty much the same. This one says that our public and private leaders should actually work to create these connections. Well, I agree. That's why those team building exercises in corporate settings are so incredibly successful, because somebody said, you know what, we need a little more solidarity around here. We need more relationships. And one way to do that is let's make a structured event for people to go to. You know, weekend picnics, baseball games, it's all the same. Stay tuned.
Okay, I've been hearing a lot about the LifeWave patches, and they sound amazing. And I'm thinking I want to try them for myself. But can you tell me how they work?
Okay, well, you wear the patch, which is about the size of a quarter, 12 hours a day, 12 on, 12 off. And the patch uses your body's own light and energy and copper peptides to reactivate the dormant stem cells in your body. Once a stem cell has been reactivated, it can be used by any of the cells in your body that need it, creating a healing and growth process you haven't experienced since your youth. So in a nutshell, this is how the LifeWave X39 patch works.
You can purchase the LifeWave patches by going to AmericasFreedomNetwork.com. Then click on the Natural Health Products button at the top of the page. That's AmericasFreedomNetwork.com.
Look, this product works, and you've got nothing to lose because there's a 100% money-back guarantee.
That's AmericasFreedomNetwork.com.
God is in this place, truly. God is in this place, truly. Incredible, wonderful, holy.
Hey, I'm back. All right, Catherine Albert here. I'm trying to look up these summer camps, these articles on summer camps. I would love to find out. I think these are anecdotal. I don't think they've done actual studies on them right now. But the one that I found before was in the Wall Street Journal. Adults are going away to sleepaway camp to make friends. It seems to actually work. Overnight camps are increasingly catering to solo travelers who are looking for an in-person connection. And we've all had that experience. You know, sometimes when you go through something rough together, like I'm thinking about the horrors that Manhattan went through during the Twin Towers attacks and the weeks after that, there was a sense of connection. I think if you talk to people who went through that, they will say, in many cases, that it was one of the times that they felt the most connected to other people around them ever. And people who live in that area have said, you know, when you're living in a place that's that packed and full of people, you can feel really isolated. But during that period of time, people felt that they knew their neighbors, that they cared about their neighbors. So the wartime does the same thing. I'm you know, these are negative experiences, but you will hear, you know, people, veterans who say the best friends I ever had were the people who I went through that tough stuff with. And why is that? Because you're forced to be in connection with other people working together to support each other and find a solution to an external threat. And we don't have a lot of that, and we're having less and less. And as the research was finding that people have a sense of purposelessness and that that is contributing to their unhappiness, what's going to happen when not only do we have the ability to order groceries online, but when AI takes our jobs, when we don't even have a reason to log online and do a thing remotely because AI is there doing it for us? Yeah. All right. I'm going to go ahead and say this. I have been working on the kind of the overview, the introduction to my book. And one of the things that I kind of crystallized for me today was that when Adam and Eve made the deal and said, we want the powers of God by eating the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, which is technology, one of the outcomes of that was for people to become enslaved, to have to adopt technology no matter the cost. Even technologies that seem dark and horrible that you can look at and go, why would we want that? Why would we want to pursue that? There is a compulsion, and I believe that the deal humanity struck, that Adam and Eve committed us to for all of human history, is the deal that when negative technologies come along, we are powerless to say no to them. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? And it doesn't matter what they are or how horrible they are. They seem to have a life of their own, and humanity seems to have a compulsion to adopt them, to spread them throughout society, to replicate them as fast as we can. And even when we know that the outcome is awful, we do it anyway. Yeah, I think that's part of the curse. I actually do. I think that's part of the curse of the fall. We get the good stuff, right? It's really great that I have the ability to broadcast to you from here. You know, we're in different states, maybe in different countries. We're far away. I can share my thoughts with you. You can hear the thoughts. We can communicate together. You can write me an email or call into the show. That's really great. But the downside of the technology that allows this to happen, the downside is what we are experiencing as a society, and that's that loneliness, the loneliness. All right, I just pulled up the page, and I'm going to share it with you. This is the Wall Street Journal. Let's see how this ties in with what we're talking about. Jocelyn Benson made some of her closest friendships at a sleepaway camp while hiking, climbing the ropes course, and cheering for teammates. She lived in a bunk with other campers, chatted late into the night, and made plans to see them once camp ended. She also mingled with fellow campers and drank wine and cocktails and stayed up till 1:30 in the morning. After all, she's 29 years old. Sleepaway camp, which we used to call overnight camp, is not just for kids anymore. Two summers ago, she's now 31, she started going to something called Camp Social. It's a three-day overnight camp for women in Pennsylvania's Pocono Mountains, and she is going every year, plans to continue. When you're in your 20s and 30s, you don't make a lot of friends unless you're doing something that bonds you together, right? That used to be work. That used to be, well, I don't know, go back a couple hundred years, that used to be your extended family. You would get married and have kids, if you're a woman, and you would be surrounded by all the other female members of your household and community who had kids, and you would get together and you would do stuff together. That is no longer the case. We're really lonely in our society. All right. She says she now has a girls group she goes on trips with, and one of her closest friends at Camp Social became her roommate for a year in her Provo, Utah home. Perhaps it was the paint, the war paint they smeared under their eyes to display their color war team spirit, or cheering each other on during a relay that connected them so tightly. As she put it, we got to be silly together. All right. And then the rest of the article, I'll post a link to it in my archives at Catherine-Albrecht.com, along with all the other research that I've been reading from. But isn't it interesting that we are so lonely that we're having to create artificial opportunities or contrived opportunities to make friends? And I used to think this when I would go to the gym and see people pedaling on bikes that were going nowhere. And I thought to myself, we have become so sedentary because we have created all these ways to avoid using our bodies that now we have to create artificial ways to keep ourselves in shape, to exercise, that contribute to nothing. I've thought many times that if we could connect all of the exercise bikes and the treadmills and the weightlifting machines and all the different things that human beings are putting in physical effort to move, and we could connect those to some kind of a generator, we would have a whole new power source. we wouldn't need windmills and solar panels. We could just use human energy. There's a lot of it out there, and it's not being put to use. And isn't it ironic that the electricity that is powering all of the things we used to do with our bodies, that, you know, all of that energy, it's literally power. It is going out there to prevent us from having to do things, and then we've got to figure out ways to just even keep our bodies alive that we're not using. Same with our social skills. All right, overnight camp here. Camp Social joins a number of grown-up sleepaway camps, including something called Camp Getaway, Camp Camp, and Camp No Counselors that have seen a surge of new campers in recent years. Demand was high enough that Camp Social, which hosts 400 female campers per session, added yet a second camp in September. All right. These are in Pennsylvania and California. Camp directors say that in the past, campers would come with large friend groups, but these days they're coming alone. Shriver said 92% of the people attending Camp Social come alone. Hopefully they leave with friends. Anyone that's worked at a camp or grown up at the camp world understands there's a powerful people connection that forms at camp, just like in all those other social experiences. It's magic, and it's hard to replicate in the regular world. And I have thought to myself, wouldn't it be great if we had something like they have in Finland, where if you are, maybe you're out of work, maybe you're retired, maybe you're just lonely, and you want to get together with other people and do something, how do you do that in our society? There aren't structures available to do it. You can find a meetup group, and I've looked into those, but none of them really look like a good match for me. You could maybe do some online dating if you're not married. But if you are married or partnered or not looking for that kind of partnership, which doesn't always bring happiness anyway, and I've heard a lot of complaints about trying to find friendship that way. If you are married and your spouse and you have different interests, how can you go out and experience something together or separately that brings you that sense of social connection? It puts a lot of pressure, speaking of marriages, this whole loneliness epidemic puts a huge amount of pressure on marriages too. In the old days, as I was describing, where women are surrounded by other women and they're doing sewing circles and they're caring for each other's kids who are running around and playing, and they're gossiping and knitting and, well, I don't know, gossiping, chatting, talking, conversing. Women had their social needs met through those kinds of interactions, and they didn't put so much pressure on their husbands to communicate with them, to be their social connection. You men out there, I don't know that you were even wired to be that for women. So this is putting pressure on young people. It's putting pressure on marriages. It's putting pressure on all of us all the way around. So simplicity is one answer, but community. See if you can find a way to reach out to someone you care about. See if you can share with me some ways to bring more community into our lives. All right, this is Catherine Albrecht, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend involving other people. God bless you. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.